We are on the Lamed Beis Amud Beis, about halfway down in the Gemara. It's about the end of the fifth very wide line. It's the last word on the line. Vatomer Tzion Azavani Hashem. The Gemara's drasha here, or the placement of this drasha, is a little bit unclear. It's not clear what this is doing here. The best I can make out, and perhaps I'm missing something obvious, is that the last line in this section actually quotes Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yoshaya saying the same thing that was said in the larger part of the section, which we'll read in a second. And because we basically have been dealing with all sorts of agadic statements from Rabbi Elazar, initially related to our topic of tefillah, and then subsequently moving on and kind of loosely connected. So that may be why this passage is here. But when you start out the passage, there's no apparent connection to anything that's come before or what comes after. In fact, this passage, I think, is the end of this section, and then we go on to analyze now the next part of the Mishnah. But up until now, we've been dealing with the laws of Ein Omdim L'Spalo Mitoch Kovod Rosh, and then the next line in the Mishnah, which is going to be analyzed subsequently here, at the end of the section, is Chasidim Harishonim Hayushon Sha'achas. The pious ones of antiquity used to meditate an hour before davening. So this is the last part of the previous sections. The Gemara says the following: Vatomer Tzion Azavani Hashem Vashem Sheichani. So this particular verse is from the book of Isaiah. I think it's the Haftorah of Akev. It's one of the Haftorahs after Tisha B'Av. And literally it means that Tzion has said that God has abandoned me and God has forgotten me. Vashem Sheichani. So the Gemara says, Hainu Azuva, Hainu Shchucha. What is the repetition about? Azuva, abandoned and forgotten, are the same things. Amar Reish Lakish, Amar Knesset Yisrael Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Reish Lakish understands the verse as follows. The Jewish people, Knesset Yisrael, stated to God, Ribono Shel Olam, God, Adam Nosei Isha Al Ishto Rishona. If a person marries a wife in addition to or after his being married once, Zocher Masa HaRishona, He remembers the first wife. But Ata Azavtani, you have basically thrown me out, you've divorced me, you've sent me away, Ushachtani, and you've forgotten me. So Amar La Kadosh Baruch Hu says in response, and this is going to be based upon the next verse, but the Gemara here first is going to fill out a very expansive statement. Biti, my daughter, Yud Beis Mazalos Barasi Barakia, I created 12 constellations in the heavens. The use of the term mazel here is different than typically the term mazel that we use as in mazel tov and the mazelos. Normally the mazelos refer to, there are seven mazelos. The seven mazelos are the sun, the moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. And in Hebrew, known as the Shemesh, the Areach, Noga is Venus, Mercury is Kochav, Mars is Madin, Saturn is Shabtai, and Jupiter is Tzedek. Those are the seven mazalos. And the way the ancients perceived things, and this is actually described in the Gemara at the end of Masechet Shabbos, when the Gemara discusses the question of Yesh Mazal Yisrael, Ein Mazal Yisrael, are the Jewish people governed by these planetary influences? So every hour of every day is governed by one of these seven celestial bodies. And these were the seven celestial bodies, large ones, that were visible in the ancient world. Today, I mean, I think even with a telescope, I don't know if you can see Neptune or Uranus, maybe you can see it, I'm sure you can see them with telescopes, but they couldn't see them with the naked eye. So these were the seven heavenly, large heavenly bodies, and obviously they didn't see Earth as a planet, because that was us, that was themselves. And so each of these rules over 1 hour, and it rotates through. So each day of the week, in fact, has one of these planetary bodies that rules over them. And the names of the days of the week are actually connected to that. Saturday is Saturn, and Sunday is the sun, and Monday is the moon. And I don't remember how the others relate, but I think you have to look to certain Indo-European languages, some of the Scandinavian languages, or something like that. I don't think it's Latin, where each of the names of the week corresponds to the planetary body, or the the heavenly body that rules over the first hour of that day. So that's what the term mazel, when we talk about mazel tov, and the mazalos influencing events on this world. I'm not saying that we subscribe to that, but the Gemara certainly was written in a day when that was the regnant assumption. So mazalos here don't refer to those mazalos here. It refers to just the constellations. As far as I know, and this may be very limited, it may exist beyond my knowledge, I'm not aware of Chazal seeing connections between the stars and the constellations and the influence on events below. Chazal certainly know of the constellations, the same names that we have from the Greco-Roman world, the same things you'll see in a horoscope, or where's the horoscope, and for those who subscribe to horoscopes, assumes that people born under a certain sign have certain characteristics. So in the world of Chazal, at least in that Gemara, in Shabbos, it's Daf Kof and Vav, in that Gemara, someone born at a certain time is influenced by that sign, but it's talking about the planet. So the Gemara there has an example. Someone who's born under Madim, red, which is blood, will either be a killer or a butcher or something like that. So you have to know what your characteristics are and make sure that you channel your proclivities. What's that?
A surgeon.
Yeah, except for with surgeons, you hope that you're not leaving very much blood on the table. Whereas a shochet certainly does, and a murderer does as well. But fine, it can be a surgeon as well. I don't remember what else the Gemara has there. Maybe a makizdan, maybe a bloodletter. So there's, but they also, the bloodletter, you know, I think bloodless surgery would probably be the ideal. I won't speak to it. You're a surgeon. I'm not a surgeon, but I assume that ideally you have as little blood loss as possible. But yes, we'll throw that in that category.
An executioner,
I guess. Okay, we can have a creative here. So bottom line.
Argument, right? I mean, Rambam certainly didn't believe in.
So that the rationalists do not. The Gemara itself has this idea of Ein Masel Yisrael, but even within that opinion, I think it's specifically the Jewish people aren't governed by Masel. But yes. The Rambam considered all of this to be nonsense. The Rambam in Hilchas Avodah Zarah speaks about the prohibitions on sorcery, etc., that whole long list of things, and the Rambam says they're nonsense and the Torah prohibits it, even though it doesn't actually work. So anyway, the mazalos here are not the mazalos, the seven large things that we see in the sky, but rather just the constellations. So Biti, Yud Beis mazalos, Barasi Barakia. I created 12 constellations. The Al Kol Mazel Lo Mazel, Barasi Lo Shloshim Chayel. And for each Mazel, there are 30. Chayel is literally a soldier or a unit. The Al Kol, and basically, the Gemara is going to go and say, and each one has this many that, and it breaks it down further and further. The Al Kol Chayel, the Chayel, Barasi Lo Shloshim Legion. So you can recognize that word, a legion. It's a group of soldiers. The Al-Kol Legion, the Legion. Barasi Lo Shloshim Rahaton. Rashi writes here, I think that all of these things are Shemos Shel Srara. They're all names of positions. Kigon, he gives the example, Shilton, and Hegemon, and Dukos, and Upecha. These are from different languages, different contexts. These are all names, you know, it's like in the United States, we would say general and lieutenant and colonel and etc. So these are all the equivalents. So he created, for each legion he has, 30 rahaton. Ba'alkol rahaton her rahaton, barasi lo shlosha kraton. Ba'alkol kraton u kraton, each kraton, barasi lo shloshim gistera. He created 30 gistera. Ba'alkol gistera v'gistera. On each of these gisteras, talisi bo, Shlosh meos v'shishim v'chamisha alfei ribo kochavim k'negin yimosachama. I have established 365 times 10,000. I believe that's 36.5 million. Someone could do the math. See the 3.65 there. 36.5 million stars. I created all of the corresponding, the 365 times 10,000 corresponds to the 365 days of the year. V'chulan lo barasi ela b'shvilcha. I created them only for you, for the Jewish people. That's the purpose of creation. Bereshis bara Elokim, b'shvil Yisrael shenikru reshis. Right, that's how there are a number of interpretations on yesterday's, for the first pasuk in the Torah. Bereshis, normally we take it to mean in the beginning, or in the beginning of something. And instead, in the Medrash, because reshis is such an odd form, it's a construct form in the beginning of, but we're not told what the beginning of what? So Bereshis, so they read the base not as temporal, not when, but rather as on behalf of, because of, Bereshis, Bishvil Reshis. And what is Reshis? Reshis is the Jewish people, Kodesh Yisrael LaHashem Reshis Tivuasa. The Jewish people describe this hope by Yirmiyahu as holy to God, the first of his produce. So God says to the Jewish people, what do you mean I've forgotten you? I created this entire universe, and you, I created it for you. So what are you clutching about? Va'at amris, you say, asavtani shachtani. Hasishkach, now the Gemara goes to the next pasuk, which is, in effect, God's response. Hasishkach isha ula. Will a woman ever forget her child? Will a nursing woman ever forget her child? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Klum eshkach olos ishim upitre rachamim shekrafta lefanai bamidbar. So they read it not hastishkach isha ula, as an ul is a nursing child, but rather ola, as if the sacrifice, the burnt offering. So God says, I'll never forget the karbanos that you brought to me in a pitre rachamim, the peta rechem are the firstborn animals. I won't forget that which you brought to me in the desert. So Amra Lefan of Ribona Shalolam. So the Jewish people now says to God, if there's no forgetting, if you don't forget anything, so Shema lo tishkach li maseh ha'egel. Perhaps you won't forget the fact that I did the egel. Amar la, the continuation is, gam eile tishkachna. Let me just present the pasuk. It is the pshat in the pasuk. The God says, "Hasishkach isha ula." Does a woman ever forget her child nursing? Meirachem ben bitna, from having mercy on the fruit of her womb. Gam eiles ishkachna. Even if these should be forgotten, v'anochi lo eshkachek. But I will not forget you. That's what God says to the Jewish people. But here the drasha is, here the Gemara says, "Hasishkach isha ula meirachem ben bitna." I won't forget the ola. I won't forget the pitre rachamim, the ben bitna, the firstborns that you brought to me as karbanos. Oh, but if you're not going to forget those, maybe you're not going to forget the masa egel. So the Torah, so the Gemara reads, Amar lo gam eile sishkachna. How does that come to be the masa egel? So if it doesn't immediately jump out at you, the Gemara will spell out in the next line the name Rabbi Lazar. Eile Elohecha Yisrael Asher Halucha Meretz Mitzrayim. So God says gam eile sishkachna. No, eile will be forgotten. So then, and I assume you all get the next one. Amar lefan of Ribono Shel Olam v'yeshich al b'nei chesedecha, since you sometimes will forget things, Shema tishkach li masa Sinai, perhaps you'll forget my accepting the Torah on Har Sinai. Amar la v'anochi lo eshkachech. And you can figure that one out, which is anochi Hashem Elokecha. V'hainu de Amar b'lazer Amar b'yoshai. As I said earlier, this is why I think this whole passage is quoted here. It's an agada in the name of Rabbi Elazar. Amar Lazar, Amar Rabbi Yoshaya, May desiv gam eile sishkachna, ze maseh ha'egel. V'anochi lo eshkachech, ze maseh Sinai. Because eile lohecha Yisrael versus anochi Hashem elokecha. Okay.
So all that to get to that last little
part. And I think that's why this agada is here. Otherwise, I have no idea what the connection between this passage is and everything that preceded. And the only common denominator, or the thread that I think connects it, which I think is what connected a lot of the stuff in the sugya, was that these are non-halachic or agadic statements in the name of Rabbi Elazar. It's worth perhaps reflecting for just a moment on what this actually means. It's very odd. Firstly, you might recognize the expression. I don't know if what the origin is, but this has a slight echoes of the Rosh Hashanah liturgy. So the language here, there is no forgetfulness before your throne of glory. So what does it mean for God to forget? And these are not even terms we can actually speak in theologically. It's beyond blasphemous. The idea that, you know, we normally think of God as the one who is omniscient. So I think in general, when we have descriptions of God in anthropomorphic terms, the purpose of this description is for us, is to model human behavior. So in the same way that the Gemara speaks about, the Rav spoke about this a lot, v'halachta bidrachav imitati yodei, ma ani rachum afata havei rachum. Just as I am merciful, says God, just as He is merciful, so too we should be merciful. Just as He comforts the mourners, we should comfort the mourners, etc. So it doesn't mean God is not merciful. God doesn't have human character traits, but He's described as if He has human character traits because we're supposed to emulate those things. So that is true as well. Sometimes Chazal say, Rashi quotes this in Chumash in describing the Maimed Har Sinai, the theophany, the revelation, as Kidei L'Saber Esa Ozen, in order to sort of prepare the ear in a way that it could hear. So yes, some of it, and certainly the Rambam understands this as well, that the Torah, that Scripture speaks in God in anthropomorphic terms because the common person relates to that. True. But there is this other element. And I think that the sort of message of the Agada here is, if God forgets, so we forget too. And then I think this really, you know, exists in two realms. In the more, in the less direct realm, sometimes forgetting is a blessing. If we remembered everything, we would be paralyzed and crippled emotionally in life. And it's a tremendous bracha to be able to forget, which really leads toward the more direct connection of the Gemara, is you'll notice that what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu remember and what does He forget? He forgets our sins, He remembers our merits. And it is, I think, a model that we should emulate as human beings, which is, we should try to forget the bad things that people do to us, but we should never forget the good things that they do to us. The Gemara continues now. Back to the Mishnah. Chasidim harishonim hayushayim sha'achas. The pious ones of yesteryear used to meditate, literally to wait, but obviously they weren't just hanging around shul schmoozing an hour before davening. I'm sure there's a lot of people today who would like to do that, and we wouldn't even consider them chasidim for doing that. Perhaps yentas, but not chasidim. So these people stayed around, and what they were doing is meditating. They were preparing to talk to God. The Gemara says, Minohan imili, where did they come up with this idea that this is appropriate? That where is this idea that you wait before davening? So Amar Shul ben Levi, Amar Kra, Ashrei Yoshvei Besecha, and then Ode Yehallelu Chasela. Praised are those who, we would say here, literally probably more sit rather than dwell, even though the pshat of the word Ashrei Yoshvei Besecha probably means those who dwell in your house. So here, praise to the people who sit in your house, and then, then they go and they praise you. Meaning, first they sit, then they daven. So that from here comes the idea that a person is supposed to not run into shul and you immediately jump into your daven. You're supposed to come into shul, sit down like a mensch, have a moment to pause, and then you start to move. So the chasidim harishonim hayushayim sha'achas. What does Shah Ahas mean? So we spoke about this at the beginning of the parak. Actually, I heard a beautiful drasha on Rosh Hashanah. I don't know whether it's pshat or not, but Rabbi J.J. Schachter gave the drasha one of the days in the main sanctuary in our shul in Rina in Tina. And he spoke about a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that I spoke about actually in last year's Chubat drasha, that Yesh Kona Olamo B'Shah Ahas. And he suggested that the word Shah, based upon its first occurrence in the Torah, which was yesterday's reading, v'alkayin v'almimchaso lo sha'ah, which means to turn. So he suggested that the sha'achas, that the process of tshuva begins with just one little change. You have to make one turn. Right. Now, I don't know. It's beautiful, drasha, and it's true. I'm kind of wondering at the time, because you know, I just can't shed my linguistic baggage, which is that what the word Shah, which means hour, actually means? And it occurred to me then, and I actually checked a few days ago, the word for hour, a time unit, does not exist in biblical Hebrew. It's in biblical Aramaic, but it's not in biblical Hebrew. So I really don't know, actually, whether that is truly the etymology of the word. I mean, we could give, you know, semantic drushes here, of course, because a clock turns, you know. So I don't know if that's true. It might very well be the case. The drusha was correct. It was true anyway, regardless of that. But Shah here, we would take it to mean a unit of time.
It
it's a plaything that you turn and you turn.
I thought you were going to say something else. That it's what I occupy my hours with. Lishashea may mean to kind of to play, to, I don't know.
Kind of, so
you could go either way with this, but here Shah means a time unit. The question is... Yeah, it's Mizmor Kotir Tessin film. Well, right, but that the word exists. That root appears in any number of places. It's a doubling of shin ayin something or shin something ayin. But Shah here means a unit of time. The only question, and we spoke about this, and it'll become apparent in a moment. We spoke about this at the beginning of the parak. Is sometimes we say, you know, Shah Achas means a short amount of time. It doesn't mean literally 1 hour. You know, it's like when you say, well, you know, give me a minute. Well, sometimes a minute is more than a minute. Sometimes it's just a way of saying, give me a second. It's definitely not a second. It means give me a little bit of time. Or does Shah mean literally an hour? So Rabbeinu Yonah
also applies to when you say Shema, like it's not a real hours. It's just, the less time that you can say Shema. Like, they're not real hours, but they tell you it's different each time, right? Like in the morning.
No, Shalosh Sha'os there is definitely precise. The end of 3 hours.
It's
a Shah Zmanis, meaning it's not 60 minutes, but it's a 24th, it's a 12th of the day, in that case, the day period, yes.
Right.
But sometimes it's a Shachas, means, give me, you know, it just means a small amount of time. So Rabbeinu Yonah points out from the continuation of the Gemara that it's clearly not so, because the Gemara is going to describe how the Hasidim Rishonim not only meditated an hour before Tefillah, but they decompressed for an hour after Tefillah, and they davened for an hour, which took up 9 hours of the day, and the Gemara thought, when do they get everything else done? Okay. So we'll see that in a second. But in the meantime, certainly, even though we might only aspire to be the Hasidim Rishonim, it does mean that the right thing to do is when you come to shul, firstly, I think it's, I guess, sort of a given in this, it's supposed to come on time. In fact, one is not supposed to come on time, but one is supposed to come a little bit before, even if it's for 3 minutes, to sit down, not, you know, I speak not as someone who consistently does this, or either part of this, either always arriving on time, or I walk into shul, what people do is, oh, it's davening hasn't started yet, so you schmooze with someone else. And it's often very good, not always appropriate, depends what you're talking about at Beis HaKnesses, but really, ideally, you might have a little bit, your couple of minutes of mandatory schmoozing, and then a couple of minutes to just sit down before getting moving in tefillah to sort of to try to, which the purpose, as Rabbeinu Yonah describes, is to push everything else, all the havle olam, out of our minds and try to focus on God. It's obviously very difficult to do.
And obviously they recognize it by the construct of, let's say, the morning tefillah, right? But you don't get the Shema and Shema.
Correct. And Tosas points out here, because they quote the Pasuk, because the source of waiting before us, Ashrei Yoshrei Vesecha, is why they say that actually you're supposed to use that Pasuk before Tehillah L'David. And earlier in the parak we had seen, Tosas talks about Psukei B'Zimra, and it's clear what we do by Mincha and what we do by Ne'ilah. One of the role of Ashrei there is to serve as an opportunity to say some Tehillim, to try to move one towards the towards being in the mood for Tefillah. Of course, the challenge is, then we're told now, is that you're supposed to have Kavana for Pesukei D'Zimra as well. So that becomes an extension of the Tefillah. So now, well, you need something before that. But certainly our idea of using Ashrei before davening, whether it's at Mincha, whether we have Pesukei D'Zimra in Shachris, and I would is in order to create some type of a buffer before you actually start Tefillah. Right? Andrew,
I was going to say, doesn't Ashrei also want to put us in the mindset, not just a buffer, but starts in English, like, happy are those who dwell in your house, you know what I mean, to put us in the right frame of mind?
Yes. It has content that certainly directs us in that direction, yes.
That's the same thing as other places in the field, like Ashrei Yisrael Sai Tifta. Right.
Probably those are all, yes.
You know, they recognize the failings of human beings, you know, in terms of the same way you've discussed in terms of forgetting things. You know, when they live in a much less, you know, distracted world than we do. And they have, you know, pages and pages and halakas, so
right.
It's not unique to us.
Correct.
It's just worse.
Yes, right. We have more distractions,
right.
But the same human frailties.
Yeah. you know, these things are plugged in to kind of the concept of feel, is, you know, takes advantage of the human mind again to refocus it.
Right. Okay, so the Gemara continues now. La'achar tfiloso minayin. This is in the fourth line in this section. How do you know that you're supposed to take time after your tefillah? D'chsiv ach tzadikim yodu l'shmecha, yeshvu yisharim espanecha. So the righteous give thanks to you, to your name, to you, and then yeshvu yisharim espanecha. Those who are upright, those who are straight, sit in your presence. So first you give thanks to God, that's the end of tefillah, and then you sit down. So then the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Chasidim harishonim hayushoim sha'achas u'mispalim sha'achas v'chosim mishoim sha'achas. So they used to take an hour to meditate before davening.
Yeah.
Did I skip? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's where I was.
Oh, Tanya Nami Hachi. Okay, Tanya Nami Hachi. Ha'mispalim tzarech sh'yash sha'achas yisha sha'achas kodin tzvilaso. Is that the right place?
Yeah.
U'sha'achas achar tzvilaso. Kodin tzvilaso minayim shenem ha'ashrei yishrei v'secha l'achar tzvilaso minayim d'chsiv ach tzadikim yodul shmecha yishvi yisharim espanecha. So now Tanu Rabbanan, chasidim harishonim hayushoim sha'achas. The pious of yesteryear used to wait an hour u'mispal, and then they would daven sha'achas for an hour b'chosu v'shoim sha'achas. Then they would wait another hour. V'chimeacha sheshoim teisha shos bayom. This is 9 hours of your day b'tfila, just on davening. Torasan hecha mishtameres u'malachtan hech nases. How would they have the time to sufficiently review their learning, their knowledge, in order to make sure they didn't forget? And when would they get their work done? So the Gemara says, Ela mitoch shechasidim heim, torasa mishtameres u'malachta misbareches. Because they were chasidim, therefore their Torah was preserved, they didn't forget, and they didn't have to work as much, but they, you know, I guess they were able to build, they were did such good work, they build more per hour because they did such efficient good work, and therefore they were successful. Okay.
So the implication here is that their Shmona Esrei was an hour long.
Correct. Well, their whatever constant tefillah, yes, probably, yes.
It's also notable.
That is notable. The closest I have ever seen that, but even that is still probably halfway, is the silent Amida in YU's Yom HaRayim for Rosh Hashanah Musaf, which could easily run half an hour. But an hour is a lot. So what exactly, and remember the Hasidim HaRishonim might also have existed in the time where there was no fixed Matbeah of Tefillah. I don't know if that's better or worse for that, but I think that if we spent even 5 minutes and focus, that would be a pretty good accomplishment for most of us. The Gemara continues, commenting on the last part of the Mishnah. Afilu hamelech shoel b'shlomo lo yishivenu. Even if a king greets you and you're in the middle of davening, you shouldn't respond. Amar Rabbi Yosef, lo shanu ela lamalche Yisrael, aval lamalche akum posek. It's only true by a Jewish king. It's not true by a non-Jewish king. I would say the concept here is the Jewish king says hello to you, and you don't respond. He says, oh, he's davening Shmoneh Esrei. But the Gentile king doesn't see it that way. He doesn't understand what you're doing, and therefore it is sakanas nefashos. You're not prohibited from interrupting your tefillah if your life is in danger. Therefore, malchei akum, non-Jewish kings, is assumed to be a danger that doesn't exist by Jewish kings. Truth be told, looking at many of the Jewish kings in Nevi'im, one would question whether this is such a good assumption. But we mean like an erlicha from a, you know, Jewish king. So there, you don't interrupt, because you're speaking to God, obviously. So the Gemara now tells a story. Tanu Rabbanan, I'm sorry, before that. Meisvei. Hamispalo v'ro anos bo kinegdo. Ro koron bo kinegdo. Lo yehimafsik ela makatzer v'ole. If you're davening and you see a criminal coming towards you, or you see a wagon, I guess you chose to daven in the middle of the road for some reason, or something that's going to interrupt you and perhaps cause problems for you. So you shouldn't interrupt your tefillah, you should just hurry it up. You can be makatze, you say the first part of the bracha and then the last part of the bracha. And you can shorten your tefillah greatly. So the Gemara, how do you resolve this with the Mishnah that says that with Rabbi Yosef's statement that that you're posek for Malchei Akum. Malchei Akum would be like an anus. A non-Jewish king would be like a criminal in the sense that you would be endangered if you didn't interrupt for him.
Okay. What Erlich Hayid would stop in a place where there might be a possibility of such a person passing and he'd have to make that kind of decision?
You mean what kind a person would choose to daven in a place, in an airplane, to block everybody from getting to any places? I can't imagine such a thing would happen. Okay.
Didn't we learn about shortening prayer, like when you daven in a ruin?
Hamispala b'malkom sakana. Instead of davening a full Shmoneh Esrei, we'll do just this short tefillah, the Gemara's tefillah katsara that we learned, I think, in the from the fourth parak. So you have that. That's one type of a thing. And sometimes if you mispalel baderech, sometimes you might do havineinu, which is actually a real tefillah. It's got the first three brachos, last three brachos, but the middle is basically one short phrase for each of the what for us is 13 brachos in the middle. So we have such a thing. Here, but that you sort of know when you're starting. Here, you start your Amida in a place that you shouldn't have started it because you should have been paying attention to your surroundings. Or maybe you were, but things changed. What?
Sometimes timing's off, right? So you have to stop and down.
Right. Well, correct. Right. I say the question is the place. But right? Sometimes you have no choice. And so then all of a sudden you realize that someone's coming at you and you need to get out of there. So the Braisa says that you're Makatzer V'Ola. You shorten things so you can finish quickly. So how does that work with Rabbi Yosef's statement that you're mafsik, that you interrupt when it's a non-Jewish king? So the Gemara answers, Lokasha ha-de'ef shalakatzer ha-de'ef lo'ef shalakatzer. It depends whether or not you have enough time to finish your tefillah in a shortened version. Ef shalakatzer yakatzer, v'imlav mafsik. If you have enough time that you could finish the tefillah in abridged form, that's what you do. And if you can't, then you just have to interrupt. You have to stop. There is a discussion in the Rishonim here. What do you do if you interrupt in the middle? Atosas Anaf Lamed Gimel Amar Aleph writes, there's only one Tosas there, and skip to the end of the fourth line. Umihu lo matzinu impasach sheyachzor l'rosh. What happens if I interrupt my tefillah because the king is coming to me and I have to say Shalom Aleichem, Your Highness, and he makes small talk with me because I have no choice but to make small talk. And by the time he's finished making small talk and talking about the Yankees game or the Giants game or whatever else it is, it's like, oh boy, enough time to finish my tefillah has gone by. What do I do? Or even if not, let's say I've interrupted in the middle of a bracha. What do I do? So Tosa says, "Mi lo matzino in pasach shiach l'rosh, min lo kamar in pasach koz l'rosh." Aval l'tchilas bracha mi ha'yachzor. You do have to go back to the beginning of the bracha that you're in the middle of. The im, it shouldn't be ta'a, it should be like pasach. What is the correction I have here? The im hu. Begimel rishonus and begimel achronus. If you're in the middle of the first three brachas of the Amida or the last three brachas of the Amida, what's that?
Where do you see that correction?
You may not have it. Do you have anything on the word v'im ta'a? Right, so mine I have, this is the different edition. This is the Oz Vader edition. He has a note on the bottom that quotes those who have the gears of im hu, begimel rishonus, which makes more sense because there's no ta'a. Is not, he didn't make an error here. So v'im hu, begimel rishonus, or begimel achronos, then chozer l'tchilas ha-gimel v'avos v'rishonos u'v'avodah b'achronos. Then you would restart. Because remember, the first and last three brachos of the Amida are considered one unit. So if the chazan, let's say, gets stuck in the middle, he can't daven anymore. He faints, he can't get his concentration, and you have to replace the chazan. So if he was in the middle of the bracha of Hakel HaKadosh, you go back to the beginning of the Amida. What's that? I've always thought about that question. Sorry to interrupt, but the question is, when you go back to the beginning, what do you do? If you ask me, it depends how far
you... He can tell you he's not on the
Ela.
Right.
It was a Shachar. Oh, yeah, I can picture all this.
So, some things you'd rather forget.
Whatever, you know what?
Kanai Nahara.
Memory is the positive, it's not the negative.
The truth is, the truth is that if someone were redoing it,
whatever it was.
Right. So the proper thing to do would be to restart, but you would do all the piyut. Right? In other words, you might have done, you might have said, you know, the 600 pieces of piyut, and then you would send the next person up just to start from the beginning, read right through, just regular avos, regular gluros, and maybe kedusha, you know, some part of kedusha Hashem, but you wouldn't. We'll do all the piyut again. Okay. So anyway, so bottom line is the first three brachas and the last three brachas are one unit, and therefore, if you have to interrupt the middle, Tosa says you go back to the beginning.
So would that be the same halacha? Let's say, like sometimes, let's say you start at Shmoneh Esrei later than the Tzibur, so you're not with them, and like you answer Amen or something like that. So it's the same thing. So if you were in the first three, you'd have to start again.
So according to this, you accidentally, instinctively, interrupted your thing. So it sounds like according to Tosus, yes. I have to look. I saw this very briefly in Shulchan Aruch. Unless I'm mixing together different topics, I think that the Gra, I think there are those who think Tosus is completely wrong. That there's no issue. That this whole discussion is only relevant to talking about going back and repeating on anything is only when a person is not. Rotway, he's a Gavashen Arai. We saw this earlier, and we saw this in the third parak. Someone who has to go to the bathroom, right? Yeah. Smell, things like that, where, let's say, it's particularly, I wouldn't take the smell case because that may not be you, that may be the Makom. But let's say the person needed to go to the bathroom and the urine is, in the Gemara's language, dribbling down, and finally they stop, but they had to wait a long time. So that's where, when the person isn't suitable, here it's not because the person isn't suitable. So I have to remember, I have to look again. Hold on, let me just see if I see the tzion. I should give you a quick answer here. Hey, I should have in the back. I'll tell you what I'm doing methodologically. You can't do this because you don't have in the back of the Gemara. I'm looking at the bottom of Lamed Beis Lamed Beis, to where Rabbi Yosef said, Lo Shanu Elo Lamalche Yisrael, Alamalche Akum Posek. I want to see what the little hay is there. The hay on the side tells me to go to Or Chaim, on the top right, the Mishpat Ner Mitzvah. Go to the top right of the page. And letter hay. It tells you where to look for the halacha, and it says in the last line of that little paragraph, Orachaim, Simon Kuf Dalet, Sif Aleph. So I'm going to go to the back of my Gemara. This you don't have. They did a very nice thing. It's called the Ein Mishpat Hamale, where they use those, but they actually cite the passages. And it's Kuf Dalet, Sif Aleph. All right. So the Rosh Shulchan Aruch writes in Sifei, the Chol Makom Sheposek. Im shaha kidei ligmar eskula chozer l'rosh. V'im lav, chozer l'tchilas habracha shepasak bo. V'im posak b'shalosh rishonos, chozer l'rosh v'machronos chozer l'vitzei.
So he agrees with Tosus.
He quotes this part of Tosus, but Tosus doesn't talk about shaha kidei ligmar eskula. And I think on that point, this goes back to an issue we discussed previously. We don't follow the Mechaber, I believe. And here I can't do it now because I have to see the Mishnah Berurah. I think we pass again by Shah Kedei Ligmar Skula. If you waited enough time to have done the entire Tila, you only go back. I think the Ramaz Psak elsewhere in Kriya Shema was you only go back if the person wasn't Ra'oi. But if you stop for any other reason, then it's like listening to hearing 9 shofar sounds over the course of 9 hours during the day. Your yatsa, as long as the gavra was chazi. So I have to check to see what the Mishnah Berurah writes there. But okay, so the Shulchan Aruch quotes this. I also don't have the Biur HaGra here, but the Biur HaGra I think said something. Okay, so going on in the Gemara now, Tana Rabbanan, 5 lines from the bottom of the page. Masa b'chassid echad shayim ispalo b'derech. There was a chassid who was davening on the derech. Bo sar echad v'nasan lo shalom. A star, officer came along and said hello, gave him shalom aleichem, velo hechzer lo shalom. He didn't return the greeting. Himtid lo atchasiyim tvilaso. He waited for the chassid to finish his tvila. La'achar shasiyim tvilaso. Once he finished his tvila, amar le, he said to the chassid, Reka, idiot! Velo kasur b'sarashem, it's written in your Torah, rak yishamer lecha u'shmor nafshecha, u'chsiv v'nashmar tema ol v'nafshoseichem. You're not supposed to do things to endanger yourself. When I said hello, why didn't you return my greeting? If I would have chosen to cut off your head with the sword, Mi haya tovea esdam chamiyadi. Who would have basically demanded your blood from my hand, my spilling of your blood? Now, the response is great, actually. There's a buried theological note here. Amar le, v'chassid setim, hamtein li, ad she'afai seich bedvarim, which in itself is a very odd expression. The Tsar has asked him, has challenged him, presumably, and he's not threatening to kill him now, so yet the chassid responds, hamtein li, va'afai seich bedvarim.
It means
be patient while I appease you with words. And it's very interesting. And the end of the story will be Miyad Nispayes Oso Hasar. He was appeased. It's interesting. I think that what is just buried Derech Agav here is an important lesson in conversation. Very often people talk across one another. They talk past one another, and you only need to listen to contemporary political dialogue to understand this. And I think that what the chassid is doing here is he's saying, listen, hear what I'm saying, give me a chance. This is my perspective. And when you frame things in a certain way, I've actually found it to be helpful to say, when someone challenges on something, said, you know, I hear the way I see it is, not the way it is, but the way I see it is. And you can disagree whether it is or isn't. You can't disagree with the way I see it. And I find it sometimes is disarming, which is good. The chassid is disarming the Tsar here. Hamtein li v'afai seich bedvarim. So, I hear what you said. Give me a chance now to respond. He says to him, Amar le, the chassid says to the Tsar, Ilu hayisa omei lefnei melech basar v'dam, uvacha v'erecha v'nasen lecha shalom, hayisa machzer lo? If you were standing in the presence of a regular king of blood, flesh and blood, and he says, so your friend came along and said hello to you, would you respond, Amar Lay, love? Of course not. If you were to respond, what would they do to you? Amar Lay, hayu chodchim es roshi b'sayif. Exactly what he said he could do to the chassid. They would cut off my head by the sword. So Amar Lay, the chassid said to the Tsar, v'alo dvarim kavachomer, isn't it a fortiori? Uma ato shayisa omen lefnei melech basar badam shayom kan umachar bekever. You said that the way you would behave in front of a king of flesh and blood who is here today, gone tomorrow, that's what you would have not interrupted your audience with the king. Kach ani shayisa omen lefnei melech malchei amlochim HaKadosh Baruch Hu shukhai v'kayim la'ad la'omei alotim alachas kama v'kama. How much more so me? I'm standing in the presence of the eternal God that I shouldn't interrupt. Miyad nispayis oso hasar. The Tsar said, perhaps we would say, if we're making a movie, well said. V'niftar oso chassid v'veso l'shalom. The chassid returned to his house in peace.
The question is that the Tsar believed in the God.
Or he understood what a religious personality was.
Right. He might not have gotten to this point.
Correct, but true. But the Tsar asked a question, which with Gemara answered Derech Agav, but indirectly, which was Mihaya Tovei Asdam Hamiyadi. The answer was Melech Melech Malchem Lachem. Yes.
But we don't believe in that.
Right? Well, we don't believe. We don't believe. Look, obviously, doing stupid things and
you do stupid things and you die.
Right.
So the Tsar was correct on a fundamental level, and the chassid was a chassid. And one thing I think that does emerge from the story, which is I think is true in life. I'm sure many of you have experienced this. I've seen this also, even though I live mostly in a world of Kodesh, which is that most people will respect sincere religiosity. If a person is consistent in their religious behavior, most people will respect that. It's when a person is inconsistent. Then people have no patience for that. So the chassid is a person whose religious behavior is consistent. Presumably the Tsar, I mean, again, this story, I don't know if this is a real story in the sense of a story that happened. It's a true story, but I don't know if it really happened. This is a Tsar who chooses not to kill him, who says, Kosov Bisorasim. It's written in your Torah, and he's quoting Sikkim from Torah. Like, this is not your average Tsar.
Usually those Tsars don't give you an opportunity.
What's that? Correct. Those, correct.
They say on the P.A. Rashi that a chassid echad is either Yehuda ben Baba or Yehuda of Rabbi Eli. Wasn't Yehuda ben Baba one of the Asara?
He's the one in Sanhedrin. He gave smicha. He's the one who they killed giving smicha. Yes.
Like a, could this be like an allusion to like an Asara or Gemalchut kind of situation?
Yes, sir. Who
about? Right.
I've never seen this Pnimei Rashi thing, but they say
you don't have that in here.
It says it's in Shabbos Chazayin. Kol Hechad that you say Chazayin either Yehuda ben Baba or.
Right. So it could be. It's very interesting. So the next line in the Gemara.
I mean, some of the early Roman, well, this wasn't written during Roman times, but some of the Roman, like Augustus, I mean, they gave great respect to the Jews, and they had autonomy, and, yeah.
Okay. The Gemara continues. It's a true story. I always like to say, whether it happened or not, it's a true story. So four lines before they get wide, afilu nachosh karach ala keva lo yasek. Even if a snake is coiled around his heel, he shouldn't interrupt his davening. Amar Rav Sheshes, lo shanu ela nachosh aval akrav kosek. Only true by a snake, but not a scorpion. A scorpion will bite, and you better get away. So, okay. So now the Gemara asks a question. I had a lot of difficulty with this particular line in the Gemara. What exactly was the direction of the Gemara's question? Meisive, nofal legov arayos, ein meiden alav shemes. This is a Gemara, Braisa, from the end of Maseches Yevamos, which talks about coming to testify that a woman's husband has died when you actually haven't seen and buried the body. You saw something happen to him, then you don't see the body, and are you allowed to extrapolate and assume the person is dead? So if a person falls into a lion's den, which itself, by the way, is worth noting is interesting, I don't know what a lion's... I don't know if Asian lions, which virtually don't exist, they exist in India. There's a small number, I think, in the Gur forest in India that are left. But I don't know what kind of lion's den existed naturally back once upon a time. I don't think African lions live in dens, to the best of my knowledge. I could be wrong. But it sounds like, from the story in Daniel, unless it was an artificial cage, and this story, that you actually had lion's dens, and someone basically finds themselves in a lion's den, and they fell in, and you don't see what happened, and you walk away. So, Amy even a love shemes. You cannot testify that the man has died, because maybe the lions weren't hungry, and they were resting, and they just looked at this guy funny, and he got up and walked away alive. However, Nafa lachafira malei nechashim v'akrabin. Think about Harrison Ford in Indiana Jones. So me'idin alav shemes. Okay, that obviously would have been an incorrect extrapolation from Harrison Ford, but nonetheless.
They put them both together, the scorpions and the
snakes. And the snakes.
As fighting.
Yes. So the question is, so, and then the Gemara...
They would not be concerned about a snake.
So hold on. You've already probably figured out the answer to my question. The Gemara gives an answer. Shani Hasam de Agav Itzitza Mazke. Let me step out. Read, if you look at Rashi for a second on the second line, Rashi writes, Nechashim ve'akrabim. You fall into a pit with snakes or scorpions. Ozeh, either one. That's what they do, both. Me'idin alav shemes. Alma muad hanachash lishoch. That a snake is going to bite. Now, here's the part that I don't understand in the Gemara. And the answer to the Gemara of the Gemara doesn't really answer the question. And it turns out my question really is aimed at Rashi, not at the Gemara. What is the question? Who is the question aimed at? The implication of the Braisa from Yevamos is that snakes are muad lishoch. They will, unprovoked, they will bite. So the Mishnah says, afilu nachash karoch ala keva lo yasek. So mesavei is the wrong word. Mesavei is when you ask a question against an Amora. The Gemara should have said, v'reminhu, let me cast together, let me present a contradiction between two Tanaic sources. In other words,
say that again.
When the Gemara wants to challenge something an Amora said, based upon a Tanaitic source, a Mishnah, a Braisa, they'll say Meisivei.
If
question against the Amora from a Tanaitic source, it means literally Meshivim. We respond. We give a kasha against. When the Gemara has a contradiction between two Tanaitic sources and it needs to resolve them, it says Birim Minhu, which means literally you cast them together. In contrast, you cast them in, I guess, in contrast, and you have a contradiction.
So here you think it should have been
Birim Minhu. Now, I checked all the manuscripts. It's not there. Now, it occurred to me, so really, and Gemara's answer is the following. Shani Hasa, no. The case of the snake in Yavamos is different. The agav itit samaske, it is provoked. The person lands on them, the snake gets mad. Okay, so I understand why there's no contradiction. Now, I still don't understand why is this a meisve. The Gemara, I understand the contradiction. The Mishnah implies the snake is not going to bite unprovoked. The Braisa implies, at first glance, it will bite unprovoked. The answer is, that case of the Braisa is provoked. Okay, fine. Why is that a meisve? What did Rav Shesha say that the Gemara is bothered by?
It's just the fact that he distinguished between them.
That's the answer, I believe. It took me a while. I've been through this Gemara two or three times in preparation, and whenever I prepare, I'm ahead, a little ahead of us, and I do Chazara, and it only occurred to me yesterday, on probably the third go-round, that was bothered, and I couldn't, nobody says anything. None of the Rishonim say a word, the Achronim, at least in the back, you know, the Kovetz Mefarshim, not a word about this question. I think it's obvious, and I don't know what to do with Rashi, because Rashi, Lefi Ani Yosdati, Rashi says that the challenge was Nechashim Akrabim, forget Ozeh Ozeh, Midlam Shemes. That's just explaining the Braisa. Meaning it's either or. It doesn't have to be both snakes and scorpions. Either one, either love shemesh is the braisa. Alma, from the braisa we see, and this implication is what creates the question, muad hanachash lishon. What he should have said, and I think really is the Gemara's question, is there's no difference between snakes and scorpions.
Right.
You see, if the Mishnah said afilu nachash karach alakevo lo yasek, and we would have said not just the snake, a scorpion too, and then you have the braisa. Well, obviously, I would have realized that there's a difference between the two cases, because one's a case where you're plopped down on the snakes and scorpions and they get mad, and the other's a case where you're just standing there, that they'll check you out and just go on their merry way. But it's Rav Sheshes who made the claim that there's fundamentally a difference between the two. So now all of a sudden you're saying basically a nachash never is going to bite, and an akav will bite. Well, what about the braisa? The Braisa, where you're correct, the fundamental question is the Braisa draws no distinction, and Rav Sheshes is making a distinction. And the answer is, Rav Sheshes is saying that scorpions bite or sting unprovoked. Snakes only if they're provoked, and the Braisa is a provocation. Okay, the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yitzchak, Ra'a Shivarim Posek. If you see oxen coming, you got to stop. The Tani Rabbi Oshaya, Rabbi Oshaya, Oshaya taught in a braisa, Marchikin Mishor Tam Chamishim Amma, U Mishor Muad Kimlo Enav. You should stay 50 amos away from a Shor Tam, and from a Shor Muad, one that already has established a pattern of being a wild ox, so you stay, I shouldn't even say that, a wild cow, a wild bull. I say that for a very specific reason, a wild bull. So as far as you can see them, you should get away. Tana Mishmei the Rabbi Meir, Reish Torah Bidikula, even if the ox's head is in the basket, it's busy eating. Salek le'igra, go up to the roof, v'shadi darga mitusech, and take the ladder out from beneath you. As Rashi points out, that shadi darga lav dafka. Ox, you know, bulls don't climb ladders. But the point was, it's like, get out of there. So that's why you got to be very careful. So Amar Shmuel says, however, hani yili b'shor shachar uviyome nison, m'nei shasata mirati lo beid kranav. It's only by a black ox in the springtime, when the satan is dancing between its horns, which really means, you know, when it wants to sow its wild oats, the bull is in a mood. Interestingly enough, Rabbeinu Yonah writes, they quote from Rabbeinu Yonah here, that their oxen, which were misurasim, which were castrated, I believe the definition of an ox actually is a bull that's been castrated. That's what an ox is. So their castrated bulls, We're not so wild. And I think that's why they castrate them. It makes them much less crazy. And in Shulchan Aruch, it just says, if you only have to worry about if it's an ox, that's crazy ox. If the oxen in your place are not crazy oxen, so then you don't have to worry. So that's what Shmuel says, that this din applies only to certain cases. Tanu Rabbanan. Maaseh b'makom echad shahaya arod. I don't really know what an arod is. Rashi says it's a cross between a snake and a turtle. What arod is not here, clearly, is a wild donkey. Now, you know that because in the story that's going to come up with Chaim Mendoza, this animal lives in a hole. A hole that you could put your foot on top of.
Poisonous toad.
Right. So that, it sounds some like some kind of a reptile. So the Gemara, the Brisa says, Masa b'makom echad shahaya arod v'hiya masik esabrios. It was injuring people. Bovo dir lo Rabbi Chinina ben Dosa. They came and told Rabbi Chinina ben Dosa about it. Now he's, remember, Chinina ben Dosa. He's a Tana, but he's not really a Tana. He doesn't, I don't know if there are any statements in Shas in the name of Chinina ben Dosa. He's a miracle man. He's a tzaddik. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes to him to daven when Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai's son is sick. Right? He has a different relationship with God. The Gemara there talks about it. It's the end of this parak. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai explained why he was such a, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a gadol. Why couldn't he daven himself? And he said the difference between him, he's like an officer in God's legion, maybe a high-ranking officer. But Chinina ben Dosa is the person who serves the king in his chambers. And he's like a ben bayis to the king. He has a relationship with God that's different than Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's relationship. We might even say, to an extent, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's relationship to God is through Torah, Chinina ben Dosa's relationship to God is through tefillah. So they come and tell Chinina ben Dosa, Amar lahem hariu li eschoro, show me the hole. Heruhu eschoro, they showed him the hole. V'nasan akevo al piachor, he put his foot, his heel, by the hole. Yatza unishacho, the arod came out and bit him. Umesa osa arod, and the arod dropped dead. Nitolo al sefo, he took the arod on his shoulder. Behidia le besa medrash, he brought him to besa medrash. Amar lahan, he said to them, Ubanai, see my children, ein arod memis, elaha chet memis. It's not the arod that actually kills, it's the sin that kills. The osa sha amru, oile la adam shepaga bo arod. Woe to a person who was bitten by an arod, who encounters an arod, the oilo la arod shepaga bo chinina ben Dosa. And woe to the arod chinina ben Dosa, encounters chinina ben Dosa. So the point, you know, the Gemara is not suggesting that you handle rattlesnakes carelessly, but there is an idea that the source of death ultimately is sin, and that a person who is whole with his creator does not suffer these kinds of problems. Okay. Any questions? All right. I think firstly, stories are very, very powerful. They, you know, if we have the expression, a picture is worth a thousand words, the same thing is true with a story, right? When you want to teach a child, for example, you have two choices. You can give them instructions, or you can tell them a story. And they are much more likely to grasp the story than if you, you know, explain to them the difference between right and wrong.
But some of them are marking left to go through the hole.
They're pretty interesting stories, yes. Okay.